Hear ye, hear ye, hear ye. The United States Court of Appeals for the 11th Circuit is now open according to law. God save the United States in this honorable court.
Good morning, all. I'm pleased to be sitting today with my colleagues, Judge Britt Grant and Judge Julie Carnes. And we are back to Zoom, which is an unfortunate development, but hopefully a temporary one. But thank you for all of the attorneys today for accommodating the last minute switch. As you know, Ms. Geddes is our courtroom deputy and timekeeper. And for those of you who are not familiar with our system, we operate on the traffic light system. Your time remaining will first appear in green. And when you get down to 2 minutes, it will appear in yellow. It will turn red when you have reached the end of your allotted time. If you're finishing up a sentence, when it turns red, finish that sentence, but don't just keep going. We have three cases on our calendar today. And our first case is Germaine v. U.S. Attorney General. Mr. Fogel, you have reserved 5 minutes for rebuttal. And Ms. Camilleri, you're there as well by phone?
Yes, I'm here, Your Honor.
Okay. Mr. Fogel, are you ready to proceed? If so, please begin.
I am, Your Honor. May it please the court. My name is H. Glenn Fogel, Jr., and I represent the petitioner, Emmanuelle Germaine, in this case. This is a case that hinges on basic statutory construction and plain meaning of a statute. The petitioner was convicted of making false statements on an immigration application. What he did was he checked no as to whether he'd received an unauthorized fee in connection with his petition for temporary foreign farm workers, and also incorrectly listed the number of farm workers that he needed that were needed on the form. This particular offense is not relating to document fraud. 18 U.S.C. Section 1546 A has four paragraphs which contain numerous offenses relating to the use and creation of fraudulent documents, as well as the making of false statements and impersonation. The statute is clearly divisible, and making false statements on an immigration application is not document fraud.
Why is that? What supports your claim that if he was prosecuted under paragraph four, that making false statements on a document, why is that not document fraud?
Because document fraud is using false documents and either using them or presenting them or making them. I mean, the statute is about. It's primarily about making false documents and document fraud. That there is the part of it that's making a false statement. A false statement is just a false statement on an application, as opposed to actual document fraud.
And do you have a case that says that what your client was convicted of is not in fact under paragraph four is not in fact document fraud?
No, I don't, Your Honor. There's not that many cases on this particular statute at all. But what there are cases that clearly show that the statute's divisible. So
right, but it seems to me that you've got to get past that preliminary hurdle before we even start getting into your statutory interpretation. If paragraph four and what your client was convicted of deals with document fraud, aren't we done?
If it does, that's correct, Your Honor. I mean, if it's document fraud, it's document fraud, but it's but you know, that's the point here. I mean, our argument is that it's not document fraud. I mean, document fraud is using false documents, using fraudulent documents. What he was convicted of is merely a false statement on an application.
But let me read 1546A to you. Whoever knowingly forges, counterfeits, alters, or falsely makes any immigrant or non-immigrant visa, permit, border crossing card, alien registration receipt card, or other document. Why would your client's conduct not fall within that definition?
Because it's not making a document, Your Honor. It's a false statement on an application. It's not making a document.
Is it not a document, the form that was filled out?
Well, anything is a document. I mean, essentially, I would say it's not. I'd say it's an app. It's an application.
I mean, so a document applications aren't documents then?
Well, they can be, but in this particular situation, I mean, that's not what he was convicted. He was convicted of a false statement. So anybody making a false statement on anything is submitting a false document. I mean, that's I don't think that's what the statute is actually talking about, because there's other things that it talks about as well, such as impersonation and other things. And impersonation isn't making a, you know, isn't a false document either. That's why, I mean, our point here and our argument is that this is a divisible statute with a lot of different separate offenses, and not every offense actually refers to a false document.
So which paragraphs of 1546A, in your view, relate to document fraud?
Well, definitely one and two. Three could be document. Three is different because it's debatable, because it's impersonating somebody. So that doesn't really relate necessarily to document fraud. And then the last one, it's the one making a false statement. It's making false statements. It's essentially what it is. Just making false statements it's defrauding the government, but it's not document fraud. It's not using a false passport, using a false document, making a false document, which is what a lot of the statute's about. But it includes these other offenses that aren't actually document fraud.
And just to be clear, you don't have a case from any circuit that suggests that making a false statement on a document is not in fact document fraud.
I don't. There's no case that says it is either. So I mean that's I think that's maybe one of the reasons why we're here. But I can't find anything in either way. There's a couple of cases that talk about the statute, but those particular cases, the dependent or petitioner in those cases actually used false documents. So they used a false passport or a false driver's license or different documents to to enter the United States.
What's your response to the other circuits who have interpreted the relating to parentheticals as descriptive rather than limiting?
I don't know that they necessarily interpreted them as either descriptive or limited. They didn't actually address that issue. They just basically said, oh, this person was convicted, you know, a 1546A, you know, therefore, and sentenced to more than a year, and then therefore they're an aggravated felon. So, and in those particular cases, they actually relate to, if you look at it, they actually, as to what the person or the individual did, they actually relate to somebody making, using a false document. So that's why this statute is divisible, there are some things that you can do that use document fraud, and then there are others that don't. And that's why, and that's the whole point that we're trying to make. And that's why we believe the Congress put that parenthetical in there saying relating to document fraud, because there's no reason to put that in there if they wanted to include every single offense described in 1546. Because like I said, I mean, there's another one that's impersonating somebody else. That's not document fraud either. So the point is what we're arguing on behalf of my client is that this is in fact a limiting It is in fact, the parenthetical here is limiting. And there's a, there's other statutes, I mean, there's other portions of the aggravated felony statute, I think that are also limiting as well. For instance, 101A43K2, this little I, which talks about an offense that's described in section 2421, 2422, or 2423 of Title 18 of the United States Code. It says, which says, and the parenthetical says, relating to transportation for the purpose of prostitution. Then it talks about if committed for a commercial advantage. So the parenthetical in this statute is also restrictive because the reference statutes are also divisible because they have an alternative to the transportation to include transportation for sexual activity for which any person can be charged with a criminal offense. Well, that's not necessarily prostitution. Therefore, that parenthetical is also a limiting parenthetical. So because this statute is divisible, if everything in the statute all related to document fraud, then the statute wouldn't be divisible and not everything would, and everything would be an aggravated felony in it. But in this case, it's not.
All right, Mr. Fogel, thank you. You, as I said, have reserved 5 minutes for rebuttal. Ms. Camilleri?
Yes, good morning. May it please the court, this is Dana Camilleri for the Attorney General. Petitioner's conviction under 18 U.S.C. 1546A, for which he was sentenced to 18 months in prison, is an aggravated felony. 8 U.S.C. 1101A43P plainly states that a conviction under 18 U.S.C. 1546A, for which the sentence was imposed, was more than 1 year, is an aggravated felony. The court should reject petitioner's attempts to distract from these straightforward facts. And in our view, the petition for review should be denied on that basis. I can go through things, or if the panel has questions, I'm happy to answer any questions you have.
Do you think that every section of 1546A offenses, that every section 1546A offense relates to document fraud?
So our view is that the parenthetical is descriptive, not restrictive. And, you know, we think that the plain language of the statute is referring to all of 1546A, and I think you can argue that it is all involving document fraud. And you notice in the second half of the definition, Congress does make a carve out for an exception for in which an alien is making these things for the purpose of helping an immediate family member. So if Congress really wanted to parse this out and only have certain sections apply, our view is that they would have said so more clearly than just this parenthetical. And that argument, you know, has not been accepted by the Third and the Fifth, who actually expressly said that the parentheticals are not operative in terms of these definitions.
Why is the Second Circuit wrong? Obviously, it came to a different conclusion.
I'm sorry, Your Honor, what case are you referring to?
Let me look it up. Evangelista v. Ashcroft.
I'm not sure I'm familiar with that case. Could you possibly enlighten me?
Sure.
I apologize.
The right section. They say, we are not entirely comfortable with applying the Fifth Circuit's approach to the case before us. I won't read you the whole thing, but essentially they do a little bit more slicing and dicing than the circuits that have interpreted the way you would like us to interpret.
Okay, I understand. I'm looking it up right now. I, for some reason, did not come across this case previously. So it's 1101A43M.
Yes, but don't worry about it. It's hard to interpret a case on the fly. If there's anything you'd like to say, I'm sure we could accept a letter brief, but you may not need or want to.
Okay, I understand that. I apologize, Your Honor. I had not seen this case. But I do want to address a couple of things that opposing counsel said. Just in terms of, it is different than when Congress said, for example, crime of violence as defined in whatever section, and then that needs to be interpreted. Here, Congress is simply saying a conviction under 1546A for which the term of imprisonment is more than a year is an aggravated felony. And we feel that that is with Congress's intent, that they could have parsed it differently if they wanted to. I also, if the court does feel it needs to reach whether his conviction was document fraud, I just want to point out, as we cited in our brief, that this court upheld his conviction and discussed the underlying conduct, which included him signing all of the immigration paperwork that contained the false statements and thereby attesting that they were true. That is document fraud. So I'm not sure, even if the court did want to parse things out, he simply can't prevail under these facts, in our view.
Is that all, Ms. Cavallari?
We addressed everything in our brief. If there are any other questions from the panel, I don't have anything particularly different to say from the brief.
All right. I think we're good.
Okay. Thank you very much.
All right, Mr. Fogel, you have 5 minutes left.
Thank you, Your Honor. There's no reason to put the parenthetical in there if it's not meant to be, if it's just supposed to be descriptive, because it wouldn't be necessary. The only, all they would say is they needed to do, if they wanted to include every single offense, which is a lot of different offenses within 1546, if they wanted to include everything, then they would not have put anything, then they would have just said an offense described in 18 U.S.C. 1546. There's no reason. If you look at 1546, there are offenses that are involving document fraud, and there are some that aren't. And nobody's arguing what my client was convicted of. He was convicted of making false statements on an immigration application.
I can't recall which circuit it is, but one of the circuits in a similar case said that these were descriptions because there are so many references within this statute. I mean, dozens of statutory references. What about the argument that that's a shorthand to help someone who's looking through this statute to understand which section is being referred to without having to turn to the code pages for every single one to figure out as a shorthand what's going on?
I would say that because the statutes of it, you got to look at the statutes divisible. I mean, you don't need to do that. I mean, if you don't need to put the parenthetical in there if you want to include all the offenses, and the statute is divisible. Some of the offenses are not involving document fraud, not aggravated felony. Impersonation is not document fraud, and a false statement is not document fraud.
Except if you go through the statute, they seem to be very fond of parentheticals. The statute is full of them. And looking at some of them, it doesn't seem to me that you could easily parse the parenthetical like a gun statute. I mean, they say relating to firearms offenses, and then they go through that. It seems to me that using it so often instead of just one time, say, hey, wait a minute, we're just talking about document fraud, would suggest, as Judge Grant just indicated one quarter that had surmised. This is just a descriptive thing to help the reader who's going through 40 or 50 of these things to see where they are. I mean, how do you respond to the fact they use parentheticals throughout?
They do use parentheticals throughout and some of the things and some they don't. And the ones, and I've even like the one, like the prostitution one that I've talked about, that doesn't, there's offenses that you can be convicted of that don't relate to prostitution. And that's why you need to look at the statute and determine whether it's divisible or not. If the statute is divisible and there are things that you can do that are not aggravated felonies, then it's a divisible statute. That's why you have to look further to see which part of the statute the person was convicted of to determine whether or not they were convicted of an aggravated felony.
Your argument is your client didn't engage in document fraud. He didn't engage in fraud, even though
he didn't engage
in a false statement.
Well, he engaged in fraud to the government, but it wasn't document fraud. It was a false statement.
It was on a document, wasn't it?
It was on an application. It was on an application. I mean, we're not, that's what he, but it was false statements on an immigration application. The other parts of document, the other real document fraud is having a document that's a fraudulent document. It's not making a false statement on the document.
So you're saying a document with a false statement on it is not a fraudulent document. The person has to say, create an entirely false driver's license or something else. Is there any way to have an application that is a fraudulent document in your view?
I don't think so, no. I think that's just a false statement on an application. That's what you get convicted of, making a false statement on an application. It's not a fraudulent document or a fraudulent passport or a fraudulent identity document.
So as long as the underlying document is a true document, it can't be document fraud.
Right.
All right. Thank you, Mr. Fogel. Thanks to both counsel. We have your case under submission.